Recorded Books presents a sci-fi audio production, The Jennifer Morgue by Charles Stross. This unabridged recording is narrated by Gideon Emery. This book is copyrighted 2006 by Charles Stross. This recording is copyrighted 2009 by Recorded Books. Sci-fi audio is an imprint dedicated exclusively to science fiction and fantasy titles on CD. From classics to bestsellers, cult hits to critically acclaimed award winners. This novel comprises of two parts. The first is called The Jennifer Morgue. The second is called Pimpf. And now, part one. The Jennifer Morgue.
Prologue. Jennifer. August 25, 1975. 165 degrees west, 30 degrees north. The guys from the A and B crews have been sitting on their collective ass for 5 weeks, out in the middle of nowhere. They're not alone. There's the ship's crew, from the captain on down to the lowliest assistant cook, and the CIA spooks. But the other guys have at least got something to do. The ship's crew has a vessel to run, an unholy huge behemoth, 66,000 tons of deep ocean exploratory mining ship, $400 million and 7 years in the building. The CIA dudes are keeping a wary eye on the Russian trawler that's stooging around on the horizon. And as for the Texan Wildcat drilling guys, for the past couple of days they've been working ceaselessly on the stabilized platform, bolting one 60-foot steel pipe after another onto the top of the drill string and lowering it into the depths of the Pacific Ocean. But the A and B teams have been sitting on their hands for weeks with nothing to do but oil and service the enormous mechanism floating in the moon pool at the heart of the ship, then twiddle their thumbs nervously for 80 hours as the drill lowers it into the crushing darkness. And now that Clementine is nearly on target, there's a storm coming.
"Fucking weather," complains Milgram.
"Language." Duke is a tight ass. "How bad can it get?" Milgram brandishes his paper, the latest chart to come out of the weather office on C deck, where Stan and Gilmer hunch over their green glowing radar displays and the telex from San Diego.
49 predicted within 48 hours, probability 60% and rising. We can't take that, Duke. We go over 4-6, the impellers can't keep us on station. We'll lose the string.
The kid, Steve, crowds close.
"Anyone told Spook City yet?"
The guys from Langley hang out in a trailer on E-deck with a locked vault-type door. Everyone calls it Spook City.
"Nah."
Duke doesn't sound too concerned.
"Firstly, it hasn't happened yet. Secondly, we're only 40 fathoms up from zero."
He snaps his fingers at the curious heads that have turned in his direction from their camera stations.
"Look to it, guys. We've got a job to do."
Clementine, the vast submersible grab at the end of the drill string, weighs around 3,000 tons and is nearly 200 feet long. It's a huge steel derrick, thickly coated in gray paint to resist the corrosive effects of miles of seawater. At a distance, it resembles a skeletal lobster because of the 5 steel legs protruding from either flank. Or maybe it's more like a giant man-trap lowered into the icy stillness of Davy Jones's locker to grab whatever it can from the seafloor. Duke runs the engineering office from his throne in the center of the room. One wall is covered in instruments. The other is a long stretch of windows overlooking the moon pool at the heart of the ship. A door at one side of the window wall provides access to a steel mesh catwalk 50 feet above the pool. Here in the office, the noise of the hydraulic stabilizers isn't quite deafening. There's a loud mechanical whine and a vibration they feel through the soles of their boots, but the skull-rattling throbbing is damped to a survivable level. The drilling tower above their heads lowers the endless string of pipes into the center of the pool at a steady 6 feet per minute, day in and day out. Steve tries not to look out the window at the pipes because the effect is hypnotic. They've been sliding smoothly into the depths for many hours now, lowering the grab towards the bottom of the ocean.